Okay.
Are you doing Russian twists right now? I'm noticing some straining in your abs.
The Russian twist with an 8-pound medicine ball, yes.
All right, whenever you guys are ready.
Elliot Friedman, it's a return of word association, but before we get there, some true or false questions. Elliot, true or false, you are in St. Louis.
True.
Elliot Friedman, after this podcast, you are going to work out.
I know people will think that's false, but it's true.
Elliot Friedman, true or false, there's no hot water in your hotel right now.
That is true.
What are you dreading more, the post-workout shower or the workouts?
The post-workout shower. I hate cold showers. Some weirdos like yourself like cold showers.
Yeah, man.
But I am not weird.
Wim Hof method. Iceman.
Not that way.
Yes, it is the best. Okay, here we go. Coming down in 3, 2, and 1, it is a return of word association, something we swore to do each and every week here on the podcast, and we lied, but we're back. Start us off, Elliot, with Jason Spezza.
I think there's a chance he's going to be a senator again next year. They are looking into it. They've got a lot of young players. I think Spezza would be happy to go back. I think he feels he's got a lot to give. As we know, he's one of the smartest hockey guys around. I think there's a possibility.
Jordan Eberle, someone that I saw on Thursday at the Twitter fronts.
I don't know what to make of it, to be perfectly honest. I've had some people tell me the Islanders aren't bringing him back. I've had other people tell me, don't assume that. Conversations are still going on. I really like the way Eberle played in the playoffs. I thought he played really hard. Some of the best hockey I've ever seen him play. But, you know, as with most things Islanders, you don't know what to predict when it comes to his future.
Oh, by the way, I'm not sure if you've noticed, but this is a free agent version of word association. Matt Duchene.
I think the most likely destinations are Nashville and Montreal. Not to say that something else can't happen here and there, but when I look at Duchene, I think those are the two. He's always wanted to play for Nashville. We all know that. And on the other side, you know, I think Montreal's got cap room, and I think they're interested. But I've said this many times, until Nashville's out of the picture, I always assume they're very much in the picture when it comes to him.
Jeff Skinner.
So they're obviously grinding away, Buffalo and Jeff Skinner, and there is something on the table for 8 years, somewhere between $8 and $9 million. And I think at some point in time this week, Jeff Skinner is going to have to decide if he wants Buffalo's offer or he wants to see what else is out there. Unless his rights get traded, he obviously can't sign for 8 years anywhere else. So it's hard to see how there would be an offer out there that would be higher than what is available from Buffalo. But, I mean, the two sides, they're really trying. And I think they're close. But until it's done, it's not done.
Mike Smith.
I'll tell you this. I think there's going to be a better market for goalies than some of us realize. You know, you look at the playoffs now. Everybody's talking about the two-person tandem. You know, there's 62 goalies in the league. You need to make that work for everybody. You know, Mike Smith is an older guy whose body dictates that he can't play 60 games a year, but he could be a good goalie in a tandem. And I thought he played pretty hard in the playoffs, even though Calgary was outmatched against Colorado. So I think if it's not on a deal with the Flames, I think he's going to find employment if he wants it.
And if more teams end up going Dallas model and splitting the goaltending work, you need someone that can shoulder a load. And that's Mike Smith. Kevin Hayes.
I've heard that Chicago is very interested in Kevin Hayes. They originally drafted him. He decided to go the NCAA route. Well, he was the NCAA route, and he decided to go free agency after he was done there. I think that until it's proven that it's not Chicago, I think they're a very big contender for his services.
Derek Brassard.
Tough year. Started skating again this week. I think he is anxious to prove people wrong, to who write him off. And, you know, these guys play a lot of playoff games. I think he's played 100 playoff games in the last few years. Teams are always looking for centers. I don't know where it's going to be. I think he understands he might have to take a one-year deal. But I think this is a guy who is saying, if you give me a chance, I'm going to make it worth your while.
We're going to get to Vancouver a little bit later on in the podcast, Elliot. But before we get there, Alex Edler.
So I've heard some really interesting things about this whole situation. There is definitely a feeling that this has gone off the rails. But one thing that people have always warned me about is, you know, the real deadline is coming up. If it's not July 1st itself, or I guess July 23rd when you can, or 25th or whatever it is, when you can first start talking to players, this week is a big week for a lot of teams. They want to know where their guys are going to be going, if they're staying or going. I have heard San Jose, if they lose some of their D, I still think there's a chance that, you know, maybe Vancouver and him sort it out. But this is definitely more difficult than anybody expected it would be. And there are people convinced he will not be going back to Vancouver. But again, look, if he really wants to go back and they really want him, there's a path there. I hesitate to say 100% yes or no, but there's no question this has been a lot harder than everybody thought it was going
to
be.
Is it too simple to say the issue is only term?
The issue is one, term, and two, expansion draft availability. They want him eligible for the expansion draft. He doesn't want to be.
Speaking of D, Jake Gardner.
I've heard some interesting things about Jake Gardner. One of the kind of interesting things that's happening in Toronto right now is the whole Marlowe Zaitsev thing. And one of the reasons that he was going to be out in Toronto was they just didn't have the cap room to keep him. All of a sudden, there's some interesting stuff happening in Toronto. Like, if they move Marlowe and if they move Zaitsev, depending on what they do, they could have some cap room. I think they want to bring Gardner back. I think in a perfect world, he wants to stay. But I think I'd have to see what would happen with all these other moves to see if it would be possible. Some guys have said they think that Montreal might be on Gardner. I don't know about that one. I'm not as sure about that. But I think there's always time for puck-moving defensemen in this league. And I think you'll have no problem finding a spot. You know, Chicago at the combine, you know, people said that they were kind of downplaying their interest in UFAD. I don't know if everybody's buying that as much.
You wonder what they'll do with number three, whether they could snag the defenseman from Vancouver as well. Some talk they may trade that pick and move down and try to grab a forward. Anyway, more on that Maple Leaf situation, Elliot, you just talked about a second ago, a little bit later on the podcast. Meantime, Wayne Simmonds.
You know, Wayne Simmonds is a really interesting case. You know, he's a guy who really had a tough year, and it looked really bad for him at the start of the playoffs. But what one guy told me was Pat Maroon and what he's done in the playoffs is going to help a lot of guys like Wayne Simmonds, because teams are going to look at this and they're going to say there's room for these guys, especially in the postseason. So I don't think Wayne Simmonds is necessarily going to get the kind of term he hoped for, but I think the market for him is going to be better than some of us maybe thought at the end of the year. If he's healthy enough to go, and he does take pretty good care of himself, mm-hmm, I think that there's going to be interest because of what Maroon did.
What about Brian Boyle? Do you say the same thing?
Yeah, and also, you know, these guys like Boyle and Simmonds, they have stellar reputations. You know, that's not a small thing. You know, the whole thing with Boyle is, like, he's not looking for long-term. He's a shorter-term guy, and I think that makes his situation a lot easier. Simmonds was looking for, this was supposed to be his huge payday. And maybe that doesn't happen now. I mean, we'll see. But at the very least, I think what he was targeting was less than what Boyle was targeting. So that hurts him a bit. It helps him a bit. I think the market for Simmonds is better than maybe we thought a couple weeks ago. And you never know. If he comes back next year and has a big year, you never know where this place takes you.
And we'll finish up with Thomas Vanek.
You know, I wonder if, you know, he'll be done. You know, he got to 1,000 games. which is a great accomplishment. You know, he didn't want to be traded. I don't know. Do you think that maybe, depending on what happens out there, this is it?
I look at Thomas Vanek and I say, this is more and more becoming a power play league, and that's where Thomas Vanek really helps you.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that's a bad argument. I bet you he'll probably sit there until he finds out if anybody does decide they want to go get him. But I just wonder if this is going to be the end. You know, he is 1,000 last year, and you're right, it is a power play league now. I'm curious to see where it all goes. But I don't know where the fit is for anything necessarily more than that.
You all warmed up?
I'm warmed up.
You ready for your first workout, your pre-workout, your tongue workout?
My pre-workout, I'm ready for it. I don't need a cold shower after this, I don't think. Can I give a shout-out?
Why not? It's your podcast.
No, it's our podcast.
It's our podcast, and I include Amala on that.
Okay, well, that's debatable. But, okay, so, you know, last night we came back to the hotel after the game last night, and we were sitting next at the hotel bar to two guys who were born in St. Louis,
yep.
But they moved to California after their father passed away.
Okay.
Their names are Greg and Chris Thanos, and yes, it's like Thanos and the Avengers. It's
nice.
Not the first time I'm sure they've heard that question.
Yeah.
Greg and Chris Thanos, their father, Harry, was a huge Blues fan, and they were actually wearing shirts that they made themselves in honor of their father. They're in their 40s, but they weren't old enough when the Blues made it to the Cup the last time.
Mm-hmm.
But the one lives in San Diego, and one lives in San Francisco, and they came home for the Blues in their father's honor for their first Stanley Cup home game in we know how many years, and yep. I thought it was a really nice story, and I met them at the hotel bar, and I wanted to shout it out.
That's awesome. I want to talk to you when we come back after the quick little opening here about the St. Louis Blues, that market, and whether this has a Chicago Cubs feel about it. This
okay.
is 31 Thoughts, the podcast, brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra Denali.
Hall, 27 of your 33 career hat tricks here in St. Louis. I said, this is the rink you built, Brett, so it's lovely to have you here.
Brett, outside, it's unbelievable here. And the thing about St. Louis is that there's a lot of guys who come here to play and they never leave. What is the attraction? Why is there such strong alumni here?
Well, it's a great city. Great city, great people. Schools are great. I mean, it's just... You just become part of the community and become part of the fabric of the St. Louis society. And it's great to be here with wonderful people. You know, you've got the Hill with great restaurants. You've got you've got great golf. You've got everything. And it's just it's a wonderful place to be able to raise your kids in a beautiful Midwest city. And that's why people stay.
Okay, as you heard off the top and you've watched on Hockey Night in Canada, Elliot is on the road right now in St. Louis. It is an off day. This podcast being recorded on the Sunday afternoon. And this is after a really interesting Saturday night in St. Louis. Things didn't exactly go the way of the Blues or their fans, but the fact the team was back in the Stanley Cup final brought a lot of feels to the forefront. The nerves were close to the skin for a lot of people, Elliot. As you well know, you just mentioned, you know, Greg and Chris Thanos and their father, Harry. Does this kind of have, because there's a lot of St. Louis Blues fans that this really means a lot for. And Ron McLean did a great job mentioning Stan Nerodka, who does stats for us at
yep.
Hockey Night in Sports. And last night, that was fantastic. Mentioned, you know, of course, Dan Kelly, whom we all loved. His son, John, calls the games, St. Louis Blues games on television. Does this St. Louis Blues run have a sort of Chicago Cubs, you know, my dad isn't here to watch this, but boy, would he be proud. My mom was a huge St. Louis Blues fan. She would have loved this if she was still alive. Does it have that kind of flavor to it? You're right there. Set the scene for us.
It absolutely does. It's really interesting how that has kind of worked out a little bit, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question that there are a lot of people here. Just, you know, I was mingling about last night before the monsoon hit. And, you know, we had to go inside. you know, there were a lot of people out there who were kind of talking about how my parents would have loved this or my parents had season's tickets. And there were some Blues fans there that were people who've had season's tickets in their family for an awful long time. And when Brett Hull was on, we just talked to him in the pregame about, you know, how beloved the area is for guys who played. They come and they stay here. You arrive in St. Louis and you never leave. And you took a look at the building last night and, you know, in there was Keith Tkachuk, Brett Hull, Chris Pronger, who now works for the Florida Panthers. He was there. Al McGinnis. Kelly told a good story about Bob Plager, mm-hmm. who was there in the morning helping get the towels ready and the bracelets ready for the pregame show. Like, this is a city that has embraced hockey. Now, this is one of the few cities in pro sports where it's not an NFL town. Like, when the NFL was here, it was not number one. Number one here is the Cardinals. But it's also one of the cities where, you know, depending on how good or the Blues were, they were also bigger than the NFL here, which has now left St. Louis twice. So, you know, number one here is the Cardinals, and they always will be number one. But the Blues are a huge, huge part of the city. And you can tell it. Like, this place was banana. Like, I'll tell you one story. So the NHL had a concert outside the building before the game last night. And unfortunately, they had to end it a bit early because the weather got really bad. But they wanted to play Gloria, have the band play Gloria before the game. And the fans were like, no, we only play it when we win.
Oh, my.
And to me, like, that's a fan base. Like, that's a fan base. When you have, when your fans are telling the league, because they did a bit of research into it, I guess.
Yeah.
They were like, no, we can't play it until we win the game. That's good fans.
That's outstanding. And you're right. We've heard so much of, you know, the St. Louis Blues and what the community is like and how players, to your point, once you're in St. Louis, you stay. You can go away, but you always come. It's like Hotel California, right? Check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. And
right.
These guys all come back, and the minor hockey programs are outstanding, and they're cranking out high-end talent, and guys are entering the NHL on a consistent basis, and they're all from St. Louis. I wonder what this run has done, though, to give another shot in the arm for hockey in that market. We talk a lot because we live in Toronto, and right now it's, you know, Raptor Mania, and we all know what Vince Carter did for not just Toronto, but basketball in Canada. And we now know what, you know, Kawhi Leonard and the Raptors mean for basketball, not just in Toronto, but in Canada. But I do wonder, what does this St. Louis Blues run mean for hockey in St. Louis?
Well, I think it gives it a jolt in the arm, right? Like, I remember when Carolina won the Stanley Cup in 2006, I remember having a conversation with a guy who works for another team, and the next year they missed the playoffs. And somebody said to me, that's terrible. And I go, well, they're not your team. Like, he worked for another team. And I go, what do you care? And he goes, I care about the league. It's not good when a team in a market like Carolina, where you're really trying to build an identity, wins the Stanley Cup one year and misses the playoffs the next year. Just ask Tampa what happened when they went from Stanley Cup to lockout in 2004. And Jay Feaster has talked about that many times, about how bad that was. And this is a great thing, but what you need is it's got to stay. Like, some things are in the fabric. Like, as we've talked about, there's this big stupid debate right now about hockey versus basketball, and like the 14-year-olds arguing about who's more popular. You know, this is a huge, huge thing for the Raptors. The key is you've got to keep the momentum going, right? Like, the thing about Vince Carter was, before he left, they had about three incredible years that really changed things. And the Raptors, you know, they had a couple of really good years, and then they make the trade, and now Leonard has brought them to a new level. By the way, like, Nick and I were arguing at breakfast the other day. I was like, you know, even if he leaves, they should just retire his number for one great year there. And Nick's like, no, that's stupid. And I'm like, no, you're stupid. And so we were arguing about that. But what I think...
That doesn't sound like a 14-year-old conversation at all, Elliot.
No, I know. But, like, I think what it does is, I'm a big believer in, you can't just do it once. You have to be consistent. And the Blues for 25 years were maybe the most consistent franchise in the NHL. Like, them and the Bruins, they always made the playoffs. And then they got knocked out and they went through a few bad years the last decade, and it really hit them. This is huge. This shows that it's still here and it's very much part of the culture. But I think the toughest thing is, and we talk about this in Carolina too, you have to stay there a little bit. It can't be one and done. You have to have some staying power. And I think the toughest thing in the NHL right now, because there's so much parity and it's so hard to win, it's hard to have staying power. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're in a market where hockey is not directly interconnected, you really have to have staying power. It's so important.
So how do you then, if you're the St. Louis Blues, regardless of whatever happens, whether they win the Stanley Cup, lose to the Boston Bruins, whatever, how do they keep this momentum going, given that this is an increasingly more and more competitive Central Division? The Western Conference itself is continuing to get better. How do you keep that momentum going if you're the St. Louis Blues? Like, you're Doug Armstrong. What do you do here?
Well, first of all, you make sure that, you know, Craig Berube gets taken care of. You know, I'm not expecting anything to be a big deal here. But, you know, you take a look at where coaching salary is going now in this league. Okay, so the average coaching salary now in the NHL, Jeff, is just under $3 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's Craig Berube going to ask for? What are the Blues going to do?
Well, I'd look at Buffalo and say, well, Ralph Kruger just got $3 million.
Ralph Kruger got close to four.
Close to four. There you go. Close to $4 million bucks.
3.75. Like, I think it's an interesting conversation. Like, to me, if the average coach in the NHL is making 2.75, and I think it's around there, like, to me, you know, Craig Berube should come in at a minimum of 2.75. But the other thing, too, is the thing the Blues do is they find players. They had a bit of a nightmare year at the start of this year, but they consistently find good players in the draft. You know, they make pretty smart moves. Like, their owner, Tom Stillman, is not wealthy by NHL or sports ownership standards. Like, he's a wealthy man, and he cares a lot about the team. But when you take a look at, you know, where he'd rank among, like, the owners in the league in terms of just pure wealth, he's not, like, with Philip Anschutz and all those guys.
Right.
So they have to be smarter about things. And I think they're a really smart organization. And I think you just have to do a lot of the same things that you do. But to me, you got to make sure you take care of the head coach. And the second question is going to be, you got to take care of your goalie.
We talked about that last week.
I have more of an answer this week.
Okay, because that was going to be your homework, to canvass around the NHL and find out where the decimal point is on Jordan Binnington. What has your research uncovered, Sleuth Friege?
You know what a couple of different agents told me what they would do if they were in his shoes?
Hmm.
If they didn't like the contract offer, they would see if the Blues take him to arbitration and go for a two-year award. Because that takes him right to free agency.
Really? You don't think he wants...
Well, unless you get the offer you want, the contract you want, right?
See, I don't know how St. Louis doesn't take care of him after this.
I'm sure they will. Like, you know, you have to, really, right?
Yeah.
But I was just asking a bunch of guys who don't represent him, like, what would you do? And they go, if you don't get the contract you want, you see if they'll take you to arbitration, you go for a two-year award.
And the two-year award, just so everyone's on the same page, that is the club has the right to either a one- or two-year deal.
If they take you to arbitration, you have the right to opt for a two-year award. If you take them to arbitration,
right. Okay.
It's their choice.
And so then they're just walking you to free agency.
Yes.
Any other ideas out there?
Well, I mean, you're looking for the biggest deal you can possibly get, right?
What would a comparable be?
There really are none.
Like, that's the one that I keep coming back to. Like, if I'm walking into this negotiation, if I'm the agent, who am I saying this guy's relevant to?
By the way, I have a good Jordan Binnington story. But, you know, it depends. Like, he's got 2 years to UFA, right? So you're buying two UFA years, RFA years.
Buying RFAs, yeah.
Yeah, so what are you looking at? You're probably looking at, like, something that starts with a four, at least,
mm-hmm.
if it's short term.
What's your Binnington story?
So... I asked you to look into this, and you did help, but I went right to Binnington. I went right to the source, okay?
Okay.
So the story I heard was, in his first year in the OHL at Owen Sound,
yeah.
he was the backup to Scott Stager.
Mm-hmm.
And the story I was told was there was a game where Stager had a bad night, or the team had a bad night, and he went in, and not long after he went in, there were Skittles all over the ice. And the story goes that he was eating Skittles on the bench,
yeah,
and he was hiding them in his pads, and he didn't get a chance to move them, and so they ended up all over the ice.
Yeah.
And I was laughing at this. So the day off before game three, I went to talk to Bennington in the room, and I waited till the scrum was done. And he's really – like, he comes across as a really cocky guy. He was very patient that day. Like, he did a long scrum. He was very good. And I just said to him, can I ask you one question? And he goes, sure. And he goes, I explained this story, and he got a big smile on his face. Like, he was practically laughing.
A smile as in, this happened or it didn't happen?
He laughs and he goes, yeah, I'm not sure. I can't confirm that one if it's true. But I think he was totally admitting it was true without saying it.
Really? Because the people that I talked to in Owen Sound said they recall that when he was there, he really liked sweets. So that part would make some sense. But no one, and this person also talked to one of the trainers, could recall that story being true.
Well, he was laughing. So at least it created some doubt into my mind about whether it was true or not. Like, you could tell he was kind of taken aback by the question.
How did you,
to the point
on,
where he was
you,
laughing.
How did you find that story?
Somebody tipped it me off to it. He said, you've got to find this one out about Bennington.
Oh, that's outstanding.
Like, I don't know if it's true or not.
But this has happened before. Like, didn't John Garrett had a hot dog in his pads once, the WHA,
yes.
I think when he was playing with the Nordiques.
Scotty Bowman had a goalie once who did that.
Yeah, when he was with St. Louis, I think.
Yes, yes.
And the hot dog popped out in the crease. That happened to Garrett when he was playing Nordiques in the WHA. Got ushered into duty quickly. Used to put one hot dog in each of his pads when he was backing up. I think he ate one and then got called into duty. There was a scrum in front and the hot dog popped out. That's a lovely visual.
Yes.
You know what? PJ Stock's got a funny story. We should get PJ on and talk about his bubblegum story. Did you ever hear this one? It's a great story. Do you remember that it was a preseason game between the Rangers and the Islanders? And there was a line brawl, 5-on-5. And PJ ended up paired up with Trevor Linden. But instead of dropping gloves, he just started slashing them because he couldn't get the glove off. And there's a great story that goes along with it, which revolves around what was in the glove and why PJ couldn't get his glove off. We should get PJ on just to tell that story at some point on the podcast.
Okay, I'd be happy to have PJ on. So anyway, he laughed enough that it made me wonder if it was true or not true. He had a good poker face about it, but he was laughing.
We got to get one of his old teammates in that Owen Sound squad. Someone find me Joey Hishon right away to confirm or deny. Okay, so that's anything else you want to add on either the playoffs right now between the Boston Bruins, St. Louis Blues, the market itself of St. Louis, because that is an enormous story. No disrespect to Boston, but this is, you know, a wonderful hockey story that was, you know, Vegas last year and St. Louis this year with the miracle runs. Anything you want to add to that before we move on?
People really believe in the Boston conspiracy, eh?
What Boston conspiracy?
That they get all the calls.
I don't know. Last time I checked, McAvoy got suspended this year.
So Craig Berube, we're doing this on Sunday after the availability, and he says, you know, we've taken 14 penalties, and I don't like all the calls.
Didn't he also point out they're the lowest penalized team in the playoffs?
Yes, yes. And you know who was one of the lowest penalized teams in the regular season?
Who?
Toronto. Oh. So I had all the Leaf fans, after I retweeted Chris Johnston's tweet about the quote, hammering my timeline with that. But I guess people really buy the Boston conspiracy, eh? Like, the whole league is fixed for the Bruins.
Yeah, I'm not so sure I'm picking that one.
I'm not picking that up. I got to tell you, so, like, that Torrey Krug, man.
Great.
He's a hell of a player.
Last season, he did something for the Boston Bruins that Zdeno Chara has never done, and that is score 60 points. Like, he is, like, very quietly, the last couple of seasons, this guy's turned into a super high-end defenseman for the Boston Bruins. And it's all very quietly because he gets overshadowed, you know, by, of course, Chara. And then, you know, young, you know, burgeoning superstar Charlie McAvoy. And through all of it, here's Torrey Krug.
Yeah, you know, I like the way the Bruins do business, man. I just like the way that they carry themselves. I like the way that they don't panic. You know, some of the Blues guys were telling me that they were seeing, you know, Marchand smash his stick on the bench and Bergeron doing that lap before overtime. And they're like, oh, we might have something here. Like, these guys are cracking a bit. And they didn't start great the other night, but Rask held them in the first 10 minutes. And then they got going. Once they got going, they were a steamroller. They're a machine. Like, they remind me of, like, of the Patriots in a way. They have great players like the Patriots do, but they're a machine. They're all about the process. Mm-hmm. This is what we do. This is how we do things. I really admire that about them. Like, they don't ever really seem to get frustrated too often, which is why it was a bit of news when they looked like they did in game number two. But Krug told me, like, a great story about Bergeron. And he said that there'll be times where Bergeron will come into the dressing room after a bad period or something, and he'll just say, all right, I'm getting frustrated. I got to calm myself down and reset and settle down. And he doesn't stand up in the middle of the room and do it, but he does it in a way that people hear him. So he's getting the message there that we've got to reset ourselves, me and the group. And Krug says the young players see that, and they're like, it's okay to get frustrated as long as I calm myself down. Krug said it happened to him, and he seen it happen to a lot of other guys, that they'll see Bergeron say something along that lines, yeah. And it teaches young players it's okay to get frustrated as long as you settle. I thought that was really interesting.
Oh, by the way, just getting a phone call here from Robert Thomas. He would like to disagree with you about Torrey Krug settling down. Speaking of different theories, here's one. Patrice Bergeron, is he or is he not injured?
Oh, of course he's injured.
Do we have any idea what it might be? Yeah, Saturday night, he looked a lot different.
Yes, he did. But, well, you know what happens? Like, people hate how long the schedule is in the final.
Yeah.
And I get it, but you know what it's really good for? It's really good for injuries.
Sure.
If I was a player, I'd appreciate it. Because I think when you get to this point, you're so banged up. And these teams are banged up. Like, Tarasenko is banged up. Schwartz is banged up. Bergeron's banged up. The Marchand is banged up. Like, nobody's 100%. But I think the schedule in the final gives you the best chance to have a healthy final that you could possibly ask for. Hmm. Like, Robert Thomas, speaking of Robert Thomas, you know, he was out there on Sunday in an optional, and he was skating. And you could tell, we think it's a wrist, and he doesn't look great. He's not really handling the puck and shooting it that well.
Right.
But what it does allow is give you your best chance to bring him back. And I think the players do like that. It's your best chance at a healthy series.
Let's say Boston wins this entire thing. Is this the last hurrah with that group?
Why would it be?
Seems to be the hue and cry. Oh, they have to win it now because their window is closing. I don't know that I see that.
The other thing, too, is, like, guys like being there, and guys take less to play there. You know, they held the line with Pasternak. They said, look, this is what it's going to be, and they stayed there, and, you know, finally he signed. There's a number there, right? Like, you're not going over Bergeron, and you're not going over Rask.
Oh, Krejci's top dog, though.
Well, and Krejci's right there, and they did that. But these young guys, that's not happening for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, McAvoy is going to get paid, but do you think he's going over Bergeron and Rask and Krejci?
No, I don't.
Now, Krug will be the interesting one. I had a long chat with him the other day. He loves it there. Like, he really loves it there. And I didn't talk to him about his future. I didn't think it was really – he's not the kind of guy that you do that with right now. I didn't think it was really fair. But you could tell the way he talked to me about Boston and the room and the way it is there. Like, you don't have to be – Einstein to understand that this is a guy who's really proud to be a Bruin and loves being a Bruin. He loves being part of that group. The biggest thing is he's going to be tempted because somebody's going to watch this guy who, as you said, had 60 points last year, had 4 points last night. Like, we were talking today, like, I've got to vote for the Conn Smythe. If Boston wins, to me, it's Rask 1, Bergeron 2, and is Krug 3rd? I mean, maybe is he 2nd? He's going to be tempted, but you know, the one thing is, I think I could tell just from talking to him, he really loves it there.
Maybe it's just because he's from Livonia, but would Detroit be an option?
I think there's going to be a lot of teams. Like, who isn't going to want that guy?
Oh, I know, but I'm saying, like, if you look at, okay, if you're going to try to sell Torrey Krug on something that isn't the Boston Bruins,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't Detroit have the best shot at it? redeveloping team. He's the center point on the blue line.
What about
local
the
boy goes home? Rangers are another good one as well.
I mean, for sure. I mean, Detroit's obvious, and we talked about that a couple weeks ago. I think it's going to be a real challenge for them to keep him for sure. But if the day comes where he has to leave, it's not going to be easy for that guy. You could see he really loves being a Bruin.
I can't think of really anybody who has left and hasn't liked it there.
Yeah, I mean,
every time you heard, oh, yeah, I had to get out of Boston. Never.
Nah, not in a long time.
No.
Like, I look at them and, like, you know, Bergeron is still a great player. Marchand is still a great player. Pasternak is going to be a great player. Chara may be 1,000 years old, but he's still in great shape and he's still a force. And look at these young D, like not only Krug, but, you know, Clifton is coming. We see how good McAvoy is. You know, Carlo was really improved. Grizzlick, before he got hurt, like that was a really improving player. Their fourth line is killing St. Louis in this series.
Yeah.
They find guys. They got a lot of guys. And they're a really interesting organization because they made a Joe Thornton deal, which did not work out for them, and they came back and they won a Stanley Cup. They made the Tyler Seguin deal, which on its face didn't work out for them, and they're on the cusp of winning another Stanley Cup. Everybody rips their three-in-a-row picks, where DeBrusque is in the NHL and Sinishin and Zboril are not, but look at all the other players they found in the draft.
Yeah.
Like a guy like Connor Clifton, who anybody could have had. Like, they have an ability to find players. They're good at it.
You know what? There's one more thing that I'll add on top of that, Elliot. Coming out of the 204-205 lockout, they were one of the teams that tried to get rid of as many contracts going into the lockout as possible.
Yes, that's true.
They wanted to come out as clean as possible with a blank sheet, figuring it would be a bonanza of bargain hockey players. And the opposite ended up being true. Like, it was a total misread by that organization. So they handicapped themselves coming out of the lockout as well. Like, you're right. There have been a lot of moves that would have crippled other organizations for a lot of years, but not Boston.
I do admire that about them. They've been through several regime changes, and all those regimes have found guys.
And even Gorton, when he was only there for, what, 3 months? Chara drafted Marchand. They're a real nice bit of business.
Yeah, like they've had some people who've been consistent behind the scenes.
Tuukka Rask trade, that was his, I believe, as well.
Yeah, they've had guys like Scott Bradley, Neely, Don Sweeney was behind the scenes for a while. You know, Keith Gretzky was there for a while. My first year at Hockey Night, Ryan Nadeau was doing media relations, and now he's in the scouting department. Like, he's been there for a long time. And then, you know, John Ferguson came over there from San Jose, and it was under his watch that they brought in Corrali in the Jones deal, and I believe he was also pretty key on Connor Clifton. They bring in guys who behind the scenes, or they've had guys there for a long time behind the scenes, who find players. No matter who the GM is, they've always worked hard at it.
John Ferguson, I think, was pretty instrumental in the Charlie McAvoy pick as well. That the way when Boston, because there were two players that Boston wanted in that draft, both were defensemen. It was either Dante Fabro or Charlie McAvoy.
Mm-hmm.
And the Fergusons and the McAvoys lived on the same street when Fergie Sr. was with the Rangers. And so he knew the family. So I think he was instrumental in that pick.
I wonder if the McAvoys liked the Fergusons. I'll have to ask that.
Dun, 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 there you go. All right. So here we go. Moving on here on the 31 Thoughts podcast. Anything else you want to add to St. Louis or Boston, or should we move on?
No, good series.
Okay. It's been a lot of fun, and we look forward to more of it. You reported on Saturday on headlines on Hockey Night in Canada, Erik Karlsson and the San Jose Sharks. Decision time soon.
Here's what happened. Like, I wrote in my notes last week that we believe that he was going to test free agency and he wanted to see what Tampa could do. And I got a call on Saturday from somebody who said to me, you better look into this, because the word at the combine was that San Jose had some I don't know if confidence is the right word or belief is the right word, that they were going to get it done. Now, Doug Wilson did not get to the combine until late. I haven't spoken to him, so I don't know. But, you know, we've talked about Doug Wilson before, the closer.
Yep.
He hates it when I use the word salesman, but he is a good salesman. Like, he believes in San Jose and he believes in their organization. When he wants someone, more often than not, he gets his man. So what someone said to me is, you better look in on Carlson because something is going on. And the information I was given was that he is going through a process right now. I don't know if San Jose has an offer on the table or he knows what it would be. I would assume he knows what he's going to make if he stays in San Jose. And he has to make a decision. I think they've asked him to make it known this week, because if he doesn't stay, they have to move on to some other things. Mm-hmm. And I'm told that Carlson will make his decision this week. And what one player in the league told me, who I think knows Carlson well, is that you're not wrong about Carlson being interested in Tampa Bay, but what if it doesn't happen?
What if they can't make the cap space?
Well, what if, for whatever reason, Tampa Bay can't make it work or mm-hmm. it goes sideways? Like, what's Mike Tyson's old line? Everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face.
Yep.
What if it doesn't work for whatever reason in Tampa? Then where are you? And, you know, I think Erik Karlsson, he liked it more in San Jose than some of us expected. So I think one of the things he's considering is, if Tampa doesn't work, what happens if San Jose goes away as an option because they do something else? Mm-hmm. Or does San Jose make him enough of an offer that it's, you know, the best offer he can get? I don't know exactly. All I know is that he's really weighing it. And he has to decide this week. And I expect he's going to decide this week. And he's going to tell them if he's re-signing or he's going to test the market. So I think we're going to know in the near future.
If not those two teams, how goofy does the bidding get?
There are people who are concerned about all the injuries. Like, he's played a lot of games,
yep.
but he's suffered some big injuries. Like, the word is that, you know, he's not a guy who needs treatment very often. He keeps himself in good shape, and, you know, he's kind of been a bit of a rubber man throughout his career. But he needed treatment during the playoffs. Like, we don't know if he needs surgery or not. Put it this way. I think there's going to be a lot of interest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he's on the market, everyone is going to be checking in. I think the question is, what does that push the contract offer up to? Like, I had somebody telling me today they think the Islanders could be interested. What it comes down to is, how many places does he really want to go? I think winning is important to him, and he wants to go. Of course, he wants to get paid. Everybody wants to get paid, but he also wants to go somewhere where he can win. San Jose and Tampa are two places where you generally can win.
We know he can't get 8 years anywhere else should he hit the free
unless region. He gets traded.
Unless he gets traded. But does he see anything near what Ottawa last offered him?
I would say probably not. No, I mean, you never know. All it takes is one, right? But yep. I would say probably not. But again, what was going on in Ottawa at the time was bigger than money.
Okay, off the Carlson page, you guys talked about this. Nick presented it last.
Oh, can I just, well, before we do that,
yeah.
Just San Jose, I think they got a lot of balls in the air. I think that depending on what happens with Carlson, I think they could try to keep Nyquist. I think they're going to try to keep Donskoy, though it's not necessarily a big number there, but I think they could make another run at Nyquist depending on what happens with Carlson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one thing I'm just not sure about is Pavelski. I think as we sit here at the beginning of June, I think there's a lot of talk that he's going to test free agency, but a lot of
wow.
change between now and then.
Does that affect the money at all for someone like Timo Meier or Kevin LeBanc, or are those guys going to get ground down?
You know the San Jose's history. They get those done.
Yes. Usually at their number. Thank you very much. Okay, to the Maple Leafs, Patrick Marleau and Nikita Zaitsev, soon to be finding new area codes, true or false?
I think both are true. The Marleau thing, you know, Nick mentioned on the show on Saturday how the family's going back home and he wants to go back there. I think it's really complicated. What I was told today, Sunday, just before we recorded the podcast, is that this is a much tougher deal than you guys realize, at least at this time. It could always change, but at this time. And, you know, what Colorado did last year with Orpik, they traded for him, they got Grubauer with it, and then they bought out Orpik, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what a couple of teams have suggested that they would be willing to do. And that is they will trade for Marlowe and they will buy him out. Now, he's an over 35 contract, which adds complications. But I think what it says is that they don't necessarily want Marlowe the player, but they're interested in what is the asset that comes with him. So if that kind of trade is going to have to happen, who's Toronto's Grubauer? What are they giving up to make somebody take Marlowe?
Right.
I'm not convinced that Colorado and Arizona are willing to do it unless there is a steep price. Like Marlowe, it's only 1 year. Like from what Nick was saying and what I've heard about the Kings is they want you to take somebody with term. Like why would Toronto want to do that?
So someone like an Ilya Kovalchuk who's got a couple more years on term.
Yes.
At a ticket.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. If he's even willing to go.
So the option.
Could you see Ilya Kovalchuk wanting to go to Toronto?
No. I could see him wanting to go to, I mean, Boston was once an opportunity for him. I don't know if that's a fit anymore. I don't know really where there would be a fit, to be honest with you, for Ilya Kovalchuk. Yeah. Maybe, dare I say the Islanders?
Maybe.
For Kovalchuk, just because of the Lamoriello Association?
And it's New York.
Nikita Zaitsev.
I think he gets dealt. Look, teams are always looking for right shot D. Teams are always looking for right shot defensemen. And Zaitsev, the issue there is more term than money, the 5 years left. I just think that because you're always looking for defensemen in this league, there is a fit there. Again, it just depends on how the return looks. How much do teams want Toronto to eat of it? You're not going to need a huge sweetener to make it happen because I think there's people who believe that Zaitsev was just really unhappy in Toronto and a quieter change of scenery will be better for him. But I just believe that they'll be able to make that one work.
Through all of this then, and we mentioned Jake Gardiner earlier on. So
yeah.
Let's say there's no Jake Gardiner. Nikita Zaitsev's been traded. Travis Dermott's going to miss. Is it at least the first month of the season with the shoulder injury? Do they not need to do something with their blue line?
All of a sudden, this has turned into an even more interesting off season for the Toronto Maple Leafs. We knew that there was the whole Marner thing, but now you add Marlowe, you add Zaitsev. For a team that was sixth in the NHL last year, and people kind of forget about that, there can be a lot of change.
All of a sudden, your blue line is, and this is all predicated on Ron Hainsey coming back on a short-term deal. What if he goes somewhere else?
You know what? I think they will try to bring him back for a year. We'll see if it works, but I think they will try to bring him back for a year. But suddenly, you're kind of looking at last year's roster and this year's roster and saying, there could be a lot of change here.
Meanwhile, Elliot, Edmonton. We saw the press conference. Dave Tippett, Glenn Gullitson remains. Manny Viveros, not retained. Trent Yanni, not retained either. What's happening on the bench in Edmonton?
You know, obviously Gullitson is staying. I'm happy for Gullitson. He's had a lot of upheaval the last couple of years. I still think Jim Playfair is coming in there. I wonder about a guy like Mark Lamb. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see. Somebody told me that Edmonton might be looking to move one of their depth D.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. I think now Holland's starting to get his feet wet. You know, the interesting thing is the draft is going to be, there's a lot of willingness to move up and move down. And you mentioned Chicago. I've heard Colorado, their second pick, I think they're trying to move up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think some teams are willing to move down. I can't see Edmonton not making a pick, like trading their first rounder for something. But I don't know if they're willing to move up or move down. But I hear there's a lot of willingness to move around the draft. And I'm curious to see what Holland's going to do with that. But I mean, there's been a lot of Connor Brown, Edmonton talk. At the deadline, we heard Benning in Kara for Brown, and it got scuttled because Kara got hurt.
Yep.
I wouldn't be surprised if they revisit something like that. but I also think they might be willing to move one of their depth D.
Not the only team looking to move things around at the draft. Looks like Philadelphia is not necessarily married to their first round pick either.
No, Fletcher is, like, Fletcher held the Wolves at bay last year. They wanted to make big changes and he held back until he kind of figured out what was going on. Now he's going to be aggressive. You know, the other team too, but not with their first rounder. We know they're making their pick. I think Vancouver's got a lot going on. I think they're lot of things.
Every time I mention anything, and specifically to you, you always say, well, you know what? Don't forget about Vancouver.
Yeah.
everything, Friege.
They're asking about just about anybody. And part of that is a GM doing his due diligence. But I think they want to remake their blue line especially.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I've been told that they are into just about anything. They want to know what is out there, who is available, what the costs are, what the interest is in their players. They're fascinating right now. They are really fascinating right now. And by the way, I know we just did Toronto. You know who I hear has got a lot of interest from Toronto is Kadri.
Shocking. Not at all.
I think there's a lot of teams looking at Kadri. I don't know if Toronto's going to do it, but I think there's a lot of interest in him.
Kadri stuff has been hot and cold, up and down, in the news, out of the news, even going back to the most recent lockout as well, where there was some talk of him going to the Vancouver Canucks.
You know, now because of what happened in the playoffs again, there's that. But the one thing about it is I know Mike Babcock, he loves centers.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty thin at center if Kadri gets traded and they don't get one back.
Well, wasn't he one of the prime movers when it came to, you know, the urgency to sign someone like John Tavares? If we're going to win, we're going to win down the middle?
Well, it's also, he's always looking for centers, right? He's a big believer, you got to have them. If he goes, you've got Tavares and you've got Matthews, so I think you're okay in your first two. But then what are you looking at for three and four?
Which teams would be the warmest there?
I honestly think there's a lot.
Like, I don't know why you wouldn't want a high-skilled player who can get under your fingernails and can annoy you to the point of committing foul after foul and putting yourself.
I could see everybody in Western Canada being in on that.
Yeah, I could see Edmonton being in on that. I could see Calgary being in on that. I could see Vancouver. I could see all of them.
Winnipeg's looking for a left-handed center.
And he's cost-controlled.
Yeah. Oh, okay, thank you. That was housekeeping.
Ask about the hot water.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me get you a quick thought on the Gary Bettman press conference before game one. And the one thing that a lot of people will be talking about and will continue to talk about, and that is, what are we doing with video review?
We're expanding it. I was impressed with Bettman on this one, just in the sense that he knew it was coming and he was ready for us. Mm-hmm. He had the answers. Like, when you're doing those press conferences, the key is you try to figure out what all the questions are going to be, and you try to answer them all before they happen, so you're not thrown by any weird or odd questions.
Right.
And he had us. Like, there was nothing really to ask. There was one really good question about what did you think watching it, and he gave the really answers. I was trying to keep my head from exploding. But he was ready for us, and it's very clear that they have a plan. And what I understand that plan is, like, they're looking at everything everybody reviews. Like, the NCAA, they have 14 different things that you can review for. I don't know if they want to do that.
Hmm.
But what they are thinking about is not only the obvious things, but what are the surprise things? Because this year, we had the Eakin thing and the hand pass, which nobody expected. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to figure out what's going to happen that nobody's going to expect that we're going to be prepared for. Video review is coming, and that's going to be a big one. I'll tell you this, another thing that hasn't gotten a lot of attention yet, Jeff, that's going to be really interesting is going to be the cap.
The cap?
Yeah, because people have been predicting, and the league projected 83. There's no official projection coming out yet, and the players don't discuss the inflator until their meetings, which start June 9th. But some teams at the combine are telling me they're doing their information based on 82, maybe 81.
Ooh.
Now, there'll be people at the NHL who will say, that's bananas. You can't say that because there's no proof of it yet. And I know because I've asked. But just I'm telling you what it's like the Doug McLean line. I'm not telling you it's true. I'm telling you what I heard. And I've had teams telling me there are some of them preparing for an 82 cap because the 83, Bettman said when I asked him, figured included the inflator. And they just don't know what to expect from the players.
Does this do anything for this summer where both sides will, I mean, they've always been talking, but really start to sit down to negotiate the next CBA?
There'll be negotiations. We kind of know that already. Bill Daly said at the opening conference that they were going to talk about them. There were going to be talks this summer.
How much would the cap not going up as expected influence these talks?
I don't know if it would really influence it a ton. You know, I just think that teams have been warned that one of the NHL solutions to the players' concerns about escrow is lower the cap a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they knew this was possible. And also, as a couple teams told me, once they saw who either didn't make the playoffs or went out early, and we talked about this,
yeah,
they knew there was a possibility of it.
No Rangers, Leafs go out early.
Vegas is a big one.
No Chicago.
Like one team that was doing like 81 something said, that was our extreme. We don't think it's going to be that. But there are some teams that think it could be 82 something. We just don't know yet. So you plan for worst case scenarios, right?
Anything else from the Bettman presser, catch your eye?
Not really. Again, I was impressed how prepared he was for us on the replay. Clearly, they have a plan.
Something small, but for whatever reason, caught my interest. And because I was one of the people that got up super early to watch them, but no China games next season.
Well, did you hear the explanation for why they're not going back to China?
Yep.
So I think where we are currently is that we are going to forego having preseason games in China for next fall. But that doesn't mean we're slowing down any kind of Chinese strategy. The reason for that has to do with the 70th anniversary of the rise to power of the Communist Party and Mao Zedong, and our inability to book appropriate arrangements in arenas and cities because of that celebration at that time of the year. So we're going to use a phrase that I think the devil's used. We're going to double down on our efforts in China. We're going to really ramp up our presence there, hopefully including over this summer with player visits and with league visits, players association visits and the like. We're going to continue to invest in grassroots and school programs, so youth hockey, and continue to fuel the growth of youth hockey in China. But as I said, hopefully we'll be in a position to announce games for the following year much sooner than we have been able to do in the past, which should help with the promotion of those games. So, again, I think we pass on the fall of 2019, but we expect to be there in the fall of 2020.
I mean, they're not giving up on the Olympics. That's still going to be a big negotiation stick. But once I heard the reason, it made sense to me.
Okay, when we return, another edition, the second. Ellie was really good the first time around. The bar has been set high. Man, was Friedman fantastic the first time around for 3+1. 4 statements, one of which is false. Elliot guesses which one, and a couple of your thoughts, your questions at Ask 31. Stick around. Thoughts, the podcast, is brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra Denali, complete with the world's first 6-function multi-protocol gates. Hockey season is over for most, but spring is here, which means baseball, soccer, road trips. The Sierra Denali's gate comes with a built-in load stop to keep whatever you're traveling with in place and turns into a step for easier access. And once you arrive, it can also become a work surface that includes a power outlet. So whether you're loading a tackle box, working on a project, or tailgating at the game, we've got you covered. GMC Sierra Denali. We are professional grade.
Okay, Fridge, here we go. We got a hustle to finish up here. Got a lot to get to. Another edition of 3+1. You ran the table last time. You were outstanding. So here's the deal. four statements. I will read to you. Three are true. One is not. You tell me which one isn't. You have a pen ready?
I've got my notes on my iPad.
All right, 3+1. Here we go. First one. Some violent overtones of this week. Anyhow, the punch-up in Pierre Stanley, World Junior Hockey Championships 1987. Pierre Turgeon did not leave the bench, we know that, but he made it to the NHL. As a matter of fact, the only Canadian on the Canadian roster to not play an NHL game was Sean Simpson. True or false?
Okay.
Number two, go back to 1992 in the OHL.
Oh, God, okay.
You'll love this one. Guelph Storm head coach Bill LaForge once put body bags in the Kitchener Rangers dressing room to, quote-unquote, send a message.
Okay.
Number three, Kevin Lowe was the Oilers' first ever draft pick, but he also scored the team's first NHL goal and had that team's first ever NHL fight. Question number four. Todd Warner, when he was in the NHL, his nickname was One Touch. That was given to him by Benoit Hogue of the Maple Leafs. But in junior hockey, where he played with Windsor and Kitchener, his nickname was The Electric Pickle, which he got from veteran Jason York in Windsor. True or false?
Oh, my God.
You got the Pierre Stanley one with Sean Simpson. We've got Bill LaForge. We have Kevin Lowe and Todd Warner. Three are correct. One is not.
Okay. I am going to say that Kevin Lowe, the Kevin Lowe one is true. Because I know he was drafted by them in the draft.
Yep.
I know he scored their first goal, and I believe he had and the first goal was against Chicago, and he had a fight in that game. I don't know if it was their first fight, but he told me he had a fight in that game. So I'm going to say that that one is true.
The fight was against Grant Mulvey. Correct. Way to go, Friedman.
Okay.
Nice.
Now, this is not my final answer. The Bill, because I'll come back to it, but I could totally see the Bill LaForge body bags one being true. I'm not saying that's a final answer yet, but I'm putting it aside. Now, I'm trying to remember the punch up in PS90, if there's anyone else who on that team for Canada who didn't play in the NHL. I'm trying to remember, like Steve Nemeth. I remember he played in the NHL.
Yeah, that was like Shanahan and Everett Santa Pass.
Yeah, that was a great team.
Awesome
like,
team.
I'm trying to think if there's anybody else I know of on that team. Like, Scott Metcalf was on that team. He played NHL games,
correct,
right?
Correct, yes.
The only other guy, there was a French player who was on that team. And I'm trying to remember, Stéphane Roy, if he must have played NHL games. You know what? I'm going to say that one's true. I'm going to say that Sean Simpson's the only one who didn't play because I think Stéphane Roy played. Am I right?
100% correct.
Okay, so it comes down to the body bags and the electric pickle. Like, I got to tell you, the electric pickle one, it sounds like that is totally wrong. Merrick, this is the dumbest thing. If I get this one wrong, I'm going to be mad at you for fooling me with the electric pickle one way or the other. Like, the Bill LaForge body bags thing, like, if you know anything about that guy,
yeah,
he would do stuff like that. I'm angry about that I'm going to lose one way or the other on the electric pickle. This is being decided by the electric pickle. I'm going with, I just want this registered that I could lose this game to somebody being nicknamed the electric pickle or not. I'm going with Bill LaForge is true and Todd Warner is false.
The Bill LaForge story is true.
Yes!
And that was confirmed by the man not known as the electric pickle, Todd Warner. Because Todd played on that Kitchener team, and I'd heard the story before. And so I asked One Touch about it. He's like, oh yeah, Joe McDonnell got off the bus and walked in the room and knew exactly what they were and got us out of there fast. But that was Bill LaForge. He had that Like, Bill was the guy when they made visors mandatory in the OHL, had the trainer shave all the visors down to a point. So when you fought his guys, he would slice your hand up.
Oh, my God.
That was Bill LaForge. That was Bill LaForge, the late Bill LaForge.
Yeah, he was a crazy man. Now, I just want to say the punch-up in PS90, the thing I remember about that is, first of all, we have a coworker, Gare Joyce, and he wrote a great book about that. I read that book in 2 days.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, really good.
It was, and the reason I knew that there was the part in that book about Turgeon is that because he doesn't go on the ice, the player is Stéphane Waugh. He got hurt.
There was a 2-on-1.
Yes. I remember the guys who played the fewest in the NHL, I think he was the guy who played he played like 10 games. But I vividly remember that part in the book about Stéphane Waugh and how he got hurt because, you know, Turgeon didn't believe in what was happening. Can I just register a protest with the fact that this game could have been won or lost over somebody possibly being nicknamed the Electric Pickle?
Yeah, you love it. Now you're trying to think
God.
Yeah. Now you're trying to think of who you can nickname the Electric Pickle because, you know, it's such a good nickname.
I just have to tell you, by the way, I forgot to mention it earlier in the podcast. I know you're at Twitter headquarters this week, and ice surfing got picked up for another year.
Yeah, we did.
Congratulations, Jeff.
Yeah.
That's credit to the job you guys did.
That's great. That's Joel Darling, who's the exec on that, David Azuma, our producer, and everyone who worked on it, Jason York, Stan Narodka, who did our stats for us, and Steve Dangle handled social. So, yeah, a lot of fun. Glad to see it back for another season. Thank you.
All right.
So,
I'm
hey,
2-for-2 on this game.
Congrats.
Excellent.
Congrats. So, really, hang on. Hang on though, Freach. Seriously.
Yeah.
The Electric Pickle. Like you thought someone's really going to be called the Electric Pickle?
Have you ever not played a game before and said, that is so stupid it could be true?
Yeah, but that's ridiculous. Like there are things that are stupid, but seriously, Todd Warner called the Electric Pickle? Come on.
You know, Jeff, you have like a knowledge of things that are so crazy and so arcane and so weird that I dare anybody listening to this podcast to say how that couldn't possibly be true coming from your mouth.
I'm willing to bet that anyone outside of you listening to this podcast for the first time would have picked off number 4 as the false one.
I'll tell you why. You know why it's hard? First of all, I don't want to get embarrassed on this podcast. So you have to put thought into everything. That's number 1. Number 2, is it out of the realm of possibility? You look at all these things. The Bill of Forge body bag ones, I believe right from the beginning was that was true. The Kevin Lowe one, I believed almost from the beginning that was true, but I didn't know if that was their first fight. I knew he was their first pick. I knew he scored their first goal.
Yeah.
I knew he fought in that game because he told me, but I couldn't remember. I certainly didn't remember it was Grant Mulvey, like where you pulled that out. But like, is it not remotely possible that one other guy on that entire junior team didn't play an NHL game?
No, that's one of the
you get where
no, but,
where
but,
you get me
no,
is the
no, no,
details.
No. But the thing
the
is, like,
details
for those that follow like the World Junior Hockey Championships, like many will look at that World Junior team. And as much as the Grand Forks Team Canada squad was outstanding, Crosby and Bergeron and Getzlaff and a lot of guys that should have been in the NHL. You know, they'll say, hey, that was the best junior hockey team ever assembled at the tournament. A lot of people would always argue 87, despite the fact that they didn't win a medal because they were disqualified, because everybody outside of one player played in the NHL.
Yeah, you know what? I got to tell you, you could always think of that there's one guy who'd miss another game. That's where your killer is, in the details.
All right. Well, we'll see. As the weeks go on, trust me, I'll run out of good questions
and
soon.
And I'm going to start calling Warner the Electric Pickle, so technically that story is true.
Everybody start tweeting at Todd Warner, hashtag Electric Pickle. He will not have any idea. And listen, don't say where it's coming from. Just start tweeting at Todd Warner, Electric Pickle, and don't say a thing. Don't tell him what it's about. Don't tell him where it came from. Just torture him with Electric Pickle tweets. Let's get to some Ask 31s here on this Sunday afternoon. Elliot Friedman. Here we go. This has been a real topic around not just Toronto, but the entire country of Canada. As the Raptors go through their run. From Steven, what things could the NHL learn from the NBA, from CBC stuff to presentation stuff? What could the NHL learn from the NBA? You know, Taylor Hall tweeted about this the other day, sort of in a roundabout way.
You know, obviously the whole personality thing, there's no question that that's the way they do it. But, you know, I got to tell you something. Like, I retweeted Hall's tweet, and I have no problem with what he said.
Mm-hmm.
I got some interesting pushback for tweeting that out there. you know, for example, in the NBA, the players all agree to go to the podium, win or lose. Like, you watch game one, post game the other night, all those Warriors guys, they were at the podium.
It's great.
When San Jose played Pittsburgh in the Cup Final in 2016, I went to one of the games on my off days. That was Golden State Cleveland. That was the year LeBron James won. But I think I saw game two, and it was a slaughter. I think Golden State beat them by like 30. Mm-hmm. LeBron still goes to the podium. And someone from the NHL said to me, it's very hard to get guys to go to the podium, especially if they lose. They say they ask all the time, go to the podium, and guys won't do it. So I think it's like a two-way street. You know, Jeff, you and I have talked about this a ton, the different mentality from the NBA player to the NHL player. And the NBA is very much a player's league, and the players are out there, and they're forceful on social media. Like Kevin Durant, we know that he's got burner accounts and stuff, and he's fighting with people, and they're very out there and out front, and they'll say what's on their mind, and they don't care what you think. You know, the NHL is moving the line. I think we're going places. But, you know, the NHL is still very much team over individual. And, you know, that's a big thing. But the fact is, it's a player-driven league. This is not a player-driven league. And unless the players want to push it to become more of a player-driven league, I don't think you can really do all the same things the NBA does. The players are out there in the NBA. Until the NHL players are willing to be out there, I don't think you can do the same things.
You've remarked on this a couple of different times, though, Frege. That is changing rapidly.
It is changing. I do believe it's changing.
A lot of guys aren't shy about their outside interests and putting them on social media, whether it's fashion, whether it's music, whether it's starting their own businesses, because these guys more and more are, you know, their own corporations as opposed to just a teammate on a hockey team. These guys are out there a lot more than they've ever been.
Yes, and the other thing, too, I should mention, Jeff, is that I think contracts are changing. In the NBA, you know, if you take a look at it, there are exceptions to the cap, but the players, like Andrew Wiggins is a Toronto-born guy. He plays for Minnesota. A couple of years ago, there was a debate locally, do you think you deserve a max contract? So somebody said to him, finally posed him the question. He looked at the reporter quizzically, and he said, well, why wouldn't I? And he got it. And, you know, like the NHL wasn't like that a lot. And now, look at the next generation. Matthews pushed it to new heights. Marner's really pushing it right now. It's always been you take less and everybody shares. And a lot of the other sports, I think I've told this story before, but I had one agent that his company works with agents in other sports, and they say the mentality of the sports is very different. Like, I get what I deserve, and you worry about what you deserve. And the NHL is, no, I'll take a little less to make a better team. I think that's changing now, too. Mm-hmm. And I think that is another example of where we're going. The personalities in the NHL have to be willing to take control. But that also means when the NHL asks you to do things, the teams and the players have to be willing to say yes. That's something that also has been a battle before. They feel that they don't always get cooperation. So, but, you know, I think Hall, you know, I really like Hall. I think he's his own man. I think he's got a real bite to his personality. But I think it's the players who are going to have to stand up and say, hey, we want to take it in this direction, and we're not going to be told no anymore. They have to be the drivers.
Excellent points. Last one. What is, and this comes from 2GNC Podcast. What's your favorite story associated with the St. Louis Blues this season?
Ooh, well, geez, I mean, Binnington, Berube. I like the fact that, you know, Craig Berube was never getting another coaching job in this league as a head coach, and now he's three wins away from the Stanley Cup.
How many guys have been turned down by a team in Germany only to be in the Stanley Cup final a couple of years later?
It's amazing. It really is amazing. Look at Binnington. How many times did his own organization reject him? And now he's three wins away from the Stanley Cup. You know who I think is a really nice story, too, is Pat Maroon. And we're both parents, Jeff, and
yep.
It didn't work out well for him in terms of what he hoped his contract would be. But the one thing he has said, you know, privately this year is that he got a lot of chance to spend time with his kid.
Yeah.
If you're a parent out there, you know this. you can never replace time. And I'll tell you something else. Like, there's a story coming out, and I know they're working on it in The Athletic, Jeremy Rutherford, who covers the Blues. So Chris Thorburn is here. And I've always had a lot of time for Chris Thorburn. He's a pro. He just goes out and does his job. And he's a great teammate, and people like having him around. And it's public with him. They've got a child on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. You know, the Blues brought him up in March from San Antonio. And, you know, his family stayed in St. Louis. He's in San Antonio. It's not easy. They've got more than one child. You know, one of the things that that move did was it put Thorburn back on NHL insurance. And I believe the story Jeremy is coming out, is writing, I believe it's coming out Monday, so sometime around the time this podcast comes out. I believe in good karma. I believe you treat people properly and good things happen to you. That's a small thing, but I think for the Thorburns, it's a very big thing. And that is probably a story that I would say would be among my favorites, is that the Blues probably didn't have to do that, but they did. They brought him back with his family. He's able to be around here during the run. And, you know, his family gets a little bit of help there for their child's condition. You know, I got a lot of time for that. I think that you should strive to be the person in life who can make that kind of a decision that can really help someone when you don't have to. And I'm a big believer in that kind of thing.
You know, one of the great stories, too, around St. Louis this year is the Bob Plager story. You know, one of the great pranksters of all time and tough hockey players as well. As Bob Plager is, you know, he's baked into the pie now, more so than ever with the St. Louis Blues, awarding the player of the game afterwards to the guys in the room. Anytime you can do, listen, you know what else is a great story? Saturday night, Dave Stubbs, you know, hands over his Twitter to Glenn Hall to have him
tweet.
That, to me, was another, I mean, listen, things didn't work out great for St. Louis on Saturday night, but following along on Stubbsy's Twitter with Glenn Hall tweeting, to me was outstanding. There's been a number, you're right, Freach. There's too many. Some of the obvious big ones, and some of them are subtle and small, but there's a lot of great stories around the St. Louis Blues this season. That's a true testament to a wonderful organization and a great group of fans and a great group of alumni as well. Okay, you're free for your workout. What are you doing for your workout today?
Today is arms and cardio, chest and cardio stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Do you do cardio every day? You that guy?
I try to, because other than that, Jeff, I'm too fat.
Cardio melts it. Cardio does. Excellent work, Freege. Enjoy the rest of your day. I hope the hot water comes back. Otherwise, enjoy a chilly wash post-workout. Taking us out on 31 Thoughts, the podcast this week, is a five-piece band out of our nation's capital, New Swears. They're getting set to release a new LP, Night Mirror, out on June 13th. From that record, here's Rolling Stone by New Swears on 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
Just another dark bone, just another rolling stone, just another weed blowing in the breeze, yeah. My heart's broken in a million, guess I let the world know. I'm knocking on my mirror to see if I'm home, I guess I let the world know. The world now.